Welcome into the Fan pregame, Sportsnet 590, the Fan, and we are officially back. Justin Cuthbert, back from Ireland.
I am back from Ireland.
And we are back for season two of the Fan pregame.
It's just a random day. Like we're
Tuesday, October 1st.
A random day, but the fact that it's October, oh, we got a new schedule here at Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
That's why
things
it feels
are changing. It does feel like officially season two, so I think we can say that we made it there.
We made it. We made it back. Welcome to our new producer, David Siss, who's joining us for this journey. Mm-hmm. And then I got a chance to listen to the Fan Hockey Show, where our former producer, Mike Gentile, moved on up. And everything was great. It was great to have the squad back in. And there's nothing like coming in the room after Kipper and Bourne and Sammy McKee have their first show of the season. Like, the energy is palpable.
Yeah, and first time in these new chairs for Sammy, and he was feeling it, which I think he's feeling as old as I am after 7 days walking golf courses in Ireland.
There you go.
A little tough.
And you're wearing your pumpkin spice orange today.
Yeah, it's October.
It's October 1st. I think those are the worst drink you can get, though. That's my coffee take for today. We just watched some great October baseball. I will say, I honestly think it's almost impossible to top postseason baseball.
Yeah.
The intensity of it, like every weighted moment, every pitch, every at bat. I love hockey. I think maybe the NHL comes as close as it can be. I don't think playoff basketball gives me the same feelings. You know, in NFL, yeah, I think, you know, a one and done type situation. But playoff baseball, like what we just saw.
I don't even want to compare them, because every time any one of these sports rolls around, what it means more, it just absolutely changes the way you feel about it, because it doesn't feel like that or didn't feel like it last week. But with baseball, my big take on is like, I hate the pitch clock now, because I actually want the more intrigue.
Oh, yeah.
I want to see the sweat coming down the face of the pitcher, a little bit more back and forth in terms of the ISO cameras. That makes it even more intense and fun. But of course, playoff baseball is amazing. We should talk about who we like, though, while we still have time. I mean, one game's done. Tigers get one win over the Astros in a short series. So we'll see if the Astros can get themselves off the ropes tomorrow. But two games are underway right now, leaving only one more tonight. Still, though, we can talk about what we like and what we are looking forward to here over the next couple days. So when we're talking about who's going to win the World Series, or even like who has your attention right now as the playoffs are underway, like where is your focus when it comes to the start of this tournament?
I think it's with a team that isn't currently playing. I'm going to be, and I have said this before, if you listen to any iteration of Justin and I's shows from the morning show to now, I'm big on the Phillies.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going
big Rom Thompson guy.
I'm going to commit myself once again to believing in the Phillies, and obviously they're waiting the opponent between, I think it's the Mets and the Brewers, right? And so I'll have to wait and see how I feel about the matchup. But and we're watching the Milwaukee and Mets game, which is tied at 2 apiece right now. I just felt like so many times I've come to the table and been like, this is the time for the Phillies. I'm picking the Phillies. They've knocked at the door. I just think that they're even better than those previous iterations. They're extremely deep. They've got experience. They're going to have some home field advantage. They gave themselves the best opportunity possible to make this one work. Their rotation is sick. Their bullpen is sick. And they're not going to let it slip away this time. Canadian Rob Thompson as the guy behind it all, like that's maybe my in each and every year, but they slug, they can run the bases, they pitch really well out of the bullpen, as I said. And I think that they having that division lead for so long and being ready for the moment is really going to pay off. So I'm going to say that I'm big on the Phillies this year and can't wait to see them start.
Yeah, I can't really argue with you. I mean, this is the most successful team since we've been doing shows together, as you mentioned, losing in the in Game 7 of the NLCS last year and losing in the World Series. I wonder how the pressure is stacked upon them in this moment, because I think that's like a common theme with the things that are the teams that I find interesting, is that there's a lot of pressure on a few teams. And I think the Phillies are definitely among them, because how many kicks at the can are you going to have at it? But I think the ones with the most boom or bust potential are the Yankees and Dodgers. And I see a real parallel between them. I mean, they both have unbelievable offenses, more specifically what's in the middle of their order with MVP candidates galore. But I think both of them have a Achilles heel that is just waiting to get exploited. And who's going to do it? That's kind of what I'm trying to figure out right now. I think the Dodgers are ripe for the taking. I think if the Padres play them, they are built in a lab for me. to beat them with the pitching that they have and the ability to potentially get through unscathed against the likes of Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman. I just think the Padres are going to have a lot of success against them if they get there. And then the Yankees have the questions about, like, next year and whether this is the one time. I mean, Aaron Judge, we were talking about it last week or a couple weeks ago. Like, he's not the youngest guy in the world. Juan Soto is a free agent after this year, and it's not like the clock is really on them because, yeah, they can come back with Soto, and Aaron Judge is going to be Aaron Judge for another couple years at least. But I do feel like the clock is there for the Yankees. The pressure should be there for the Dodgers, and they don't seem like a team that, at least in my opinion, is well-rounded enough to win. So how the Yankees and Dodgers ultimately lose, because I do think they're going to lose, I think that's the most intriguing thing leading up to these playoffs for me.
We'll show you guys the odds a little later when we do our betting segment, but we'll take your text in at 59590, standard message and data rates to apply. Like, this is your chance. There's still some games underway, obviously, that have started today, but the World Series odds haven't shifted too much. So here's our pregame question of the day. Who's going to win the World Series? You can send us a message, 59590. Try to put your name and location so we can read them online later in the show, and you can send us a message or tweet us too. But we're going to try to do a fan pregame question of the day every day. We're going to ask you this one today. Time to stake your claim. I, like, jokingly have been like, the Tigers are my team too, because I love a gritty underdog.
Mm-hmm. You like a vibes team. There's a couple of vibes teams.
And that's another thing about the Phillies. They're a vibes team.
They are.
So I pick vibes. I'm the vibes coordinator. And the Tigers, obviously, the way that they have had this, like, Edmonton Oilers-esque run to the postseason, right? They were 10 games out. Nobody counted on them. They were sellers. No chance. It was like the Oilers when they were absolutely brutal. Then they went on that winning streak. And yes, the timelines are different, but I see some Oilers in the Tigers. Now they get up ahead in game one, which just ended against Houston. And it's the Tigers who are the gritty team that you kind of want to cheer for versus like the grizzled vet Astros team who knows exactly what this moment means.
And they bang on trash cans.
And yeah, and they're, you know, they banged on trash cans. So I kind of like to wrap around a team like the Tigers and see what this can do. But we talked about it off the air, like Scooball, and then what, right? Like,
yeah, there's no Draisaitl.
That was really nice
Scooball
to see that.
The McDavid,
they've got McDavid, but you know who's his winger?
Yeah, and we got John Morosi on at 6:30. We're gonna ask him about the Tigers because we know he's a Michigan guy. So we'll see if they have anything after Scooball that can get them through the Astros. But I think if you're looking for vibes, the Mets might be the vibes team with Grimace, Francisco Lindor.
Grimace
and what
is
happened
pretty
yesterday.
Cool.
I mean, like, they are definitely a team. I mean, to talk about boom and bust with, you know, the elite of the elite. The Mets are not elite of the elite, but I don't know how far Francisco Lindor can take them. And it seems to be a team that can play with house money a little bit because no one really thought they were going to be here. They got here and they have a chance to just make something happen without really the pressure that is on the likes of the Phillies, the Dodgers, and the Yankees. But if I did have to answer our question of the day, I love the San Diego Padres. I mean, they're a team that took away from a really talented offensive core, a lot of brand names, removed Juan Soto, brought back Michael King, went out and got Dylan Cease. They traded from a strength to completely bolster an incredible starting pitching and bullpen staff. Their pitching staff is amazing. And I said they were built in a lab to beat the Dodgers. I think they might be built in a lab to beat every team on the path to the World Series this year. So they're definitely my most interesting team. But I think the American League is wide open. I do not think the Mets ultimately can go through on the NL side because I think it's more top heavy. But any of the six teams in the American League, I think, have a chance to go through. So maybe with the exception of the Tigers, I think it might be too tall of a task.
Say that
in
now.
The end.
They've got one.
But yeah, maybe we should be paying more attention to Scooble and whoever Draisaitl might be.
Draisaitl. We have a couple texts already at 590-590. And this one I relate to because we were deciding before we came on the show, like, you know, who we're going to put in our best bet. And I'm finding it difficult to just not believe in the story of the Dodgers this year. And Ryan from Aurora sent a message and same thing. I keep trying to talk myself into betting against Ohtani and Betts, but I just can't seem to do it. Have to go with the Dodgers winning it all. And there's sometimes like the storybook that you think is being written, which would be the Ohtani season. Everything you thought this guy could do, he's done more. Is he going to pitch in the postseason? He's got this incredible, you know, 50-50 plus season. Like everything you think that was going to take a step backwards, how could he do better? He has done. Can he propel this team with big pitching questions? I know. Mm-hmm. To do something great, if there's a guy that I'm excited to see in the playoffs for the first time hit that stage, it's Ohtani. And I think sometimes it's hard that they're the favorite for a reason, but it's hard to just believe that fate won't allow it to happen, because wouldn't that be a great story?
Yeah, I mean, if Shohei Ohtani said, I'm going to pick up the ball and I'm going to be on the mound for the LA Dodgers, I would not be betting against him. Mm-hmm. But again, he can't fix the pitching woes that beset the Dodgers. Like, yeah, Shohei might be able to lead an offense that can just outscore anyone in the end. But we're seeing, like, the scores on Dodgers games down the stretch were just ridiculous. Having to score 10, 12, 14 runs, 20 in the game.
But they can
that
do
Shohei
it.
Ohtani made one of the best in baseball history. Yes, they can do it. But can they do it in the postseason when pitching usually rules? I'm not really sure. It's going to take someone to step up for them if the Dodgers are going to be worthy favorites coming into the Major League Baseball playoffs. Let's bring in our first guest of the day of MLB Network, Alana Rizzo, to talk about the Dodgers and a little bit more. But before we look ahead, I want to look back one day, hey. Alana. You know, the Mets and Braves have the two-game set where they have to split or one of them wins. Either way, one win for each gets them through. And it was unbelievable first game with drama. And the second one was not very drama-filled at all. I came away thinking, man, that was really unfair to the third team in all this, and the Arizona Diamondbacks, who are on the outside looking in. Was yesterday fair to Arizona, in your opinion?
It was fair because you have to play the games. And I tell you what, if Arizona would have won two more games, they would not have been in this position. If New York and Atlanta had won two more games over the course of the season, I don't even want to talk about that old adage of you can't lose the pennant or you can't win the pennant in April, but you can lose it. You have to realize that, yes, it's a long 162-game season, but you know what? They put themselves in this position. Now, would I have played both of the games yesterday? Probably not. I would have tried to at least have a doubleheader perhaps the previous Monday or the previous Tuesday, so we wouldn't have had to do it on that open day after the regular season, but it certainly provided for a lot of drama from the fans, a lot of anxiety and stress for the fans of those three particular clubs. But I wanted every team to play 162 games. I think that was fair. There was a thought that if it was just going to be for seeding, they may not have played it. I'm glad that they did play the doubleheader. Congratulations to the Mets. That game, I don't know that we're going to have a game in this postseason, you guys, that was better than game one of that doubleheader yesterday. It was ridiculous, the back and forth. But yeah, I do think it's fair. I mean, that's the thing. You have to, A, either win your division so you can try to get home field and the best seeding, or you've got to figure out a way to win those games that you should win. And unfortunately, Arizona didn't do that, and that's what happens when you don't control your own destiny. When you have to wait and worry and hope and pray for other teams to do things so you can get in, that's how the antacid starts getting taken because of your stress level.
We definitely saw some of that today. Detroit pulling out the 3-1 win over Houston. So let's talk about the wild card series, because we're going to see four games today and one completed so far. Which of the wild card teams, and it's not uncommon that they can actually make it to a World Series and win one. We just saw it happen. Do you think has the most upside when you look at the squads that had to fight their way in and might have to fight their way out?
Yeah, I apologize for my casual attire and casual look here. I'm like watching the games right now. And
I don't blame you.
Your hair looks absolutely gorgeous.
Thank you.
Look amazing tonight. I just think that as far as the biggest wild card team, I'm super, super psyched for Detroit. I don't have any ties to Detroit. I don't have any ties to Michigan. But what this team has gone through over the course of the last 10 years, they have not been in the postseason since 2014 has been really impressive. And the way that they've played the last, 6 weeks of the season since August 11th or whatever the heck it was is really impressive. So that was really neat to see them kind of come out. Of course, they have Tarek Skubal. I think the biggest thing is how do they perform tomorrow in a bullpen game? Obviously, when you have what's probably going to be the Cy Young Award winner on the hill and the Triple Crown winner in the AL on the mound, you expect to win and give the Houston Astros credit for battling back and being in it until the end. And, you're kind of biting your nails if you're Detroit trying to figure out, like, are we going to be able to lock this down? But they got it done. And I think, obviously whoever wins game one and makes that statement has a really good chance of moving forward. But I like Detroit's chances. I kind of picked them over the Houston Astros. Remember, the Astros we thought they were going to be sellers at the deadline. Dana Brown, their GM, said, no, we're not going to sell. And to their credit, they didn't. And here we are again with the Astros winning the AL West. I mean, it's like just a record over and over and ever, the same thing. But Good for Detroit. Now I'm watching Kansas City's up 1-0 on Baltimore. It's the top of the ninth, so Baltimore will have an opportunity here in the bottom of the ninth. But what a day, right? Four games back to back to back to back. You know, and all of the matchups are really good. Like, I think, and I was hearing what Justin was saying earlier, that there's really no clear-cut favorite in the American League, and I'm with him. I think that the National League is much harder to navigate through than the American League is. So we'll see what happens. But best sport in the world, best time of the year.
Okay, let's talk about the National League then, with the Dodgers and Phillies specifically. We'll get to the Yankees later, but you know, there's a different kind of pressure, I think, on those two teams. The Phillies have been, as we were talking about, the most successful team over the last couple of years, at least in the playoffs. The Dodgers, yeah, there's a lot of pressure because they haven't done it lately, and there's been so much heartbreak lately, but they just got Shohei Ohtani, and this is kind of not the year where they're going to be at least at their full strength. So when you look at those two teams, the teams that are not playing in this wild card round in the National League, who has more pressure on them?
I think this year it's the Yankees, just because the Yankees are whole. I think the Yankees are the better team top to bottom as far as health and roster and starting pitching and all of those things. The Dodgers, and again, no one's going to give the Dodgers a pass. I covered them for seven seasons. Nobody's going to give them a pass. They have an unbelievable payroll. They can pay whoever they want. Shohei Ohtani got $700 million. But my God, they've been decimated by starting pitching injury. So I think the Dodgers, again, even despite all of that, having massive injuries to key arms, still got the best record in baseball, still got home field advantage throughout the World Series, still got the number one seed. So they've done every single thing that they were expected to do, even though they've had major injuries. So I think the Yankees have more pressure. Everyone keeps saying, is Aaron Boone, Dave Roberts, are they going to keep their jobs? I think the Yankees have more pressure because they are whole, and they do have Aaron Judge, and they do have Juan Soto, and they do have Giancarlo Stanton, and they do have Gerrit Cole, and they do have an unbelievable payroll, and they're healthy, and they haven't been to the World Series since 2009. So they're both under pressure. I think the Yankees are under more pressure.
And they got Juan Soto to figure out this postseason. So, like, you might want to win something to keep him around.
You might want to keep him there.
Yeah. I mean, he could come to Toronto. That'd be great with us. Let's talk about, like, individual players, because I know the team sport is something special with baseball. But the world stage here, like having the World Series moment, I always look at the player that might be most equipped to break out. And it could just be Shohei Ohtani, because he's never done it before, and we're excited to watch him. But there's a lot of young talent. There's a lot of people that are getting their first opportunity to play in meaningful baseball games. Who would you circle as someone that might have a big breakthrough come October?
You know, and it's funny because you would think, like, this is a stupid choice because the guy just got a $280-something million extension or whatever it is. But not a ton of people get to see Bobby Witt Jr. play every single day. Been a small market team, mid-market team, whatever you want to consider Kansas City to be. But I think Bobby Witt Jr. is everything that embodies what an unbelievable player he is. Everybody knows who Shohei Ohtani is, but Shohei also plays in Los Angeles. Everybody, of course, deservedly so, knows who Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, all of those guys are, but they also play in New York, right? So you think about the mid-market teams, the middle of our country, and I think Bobby Witt Jr., I'm looking at him right now, actually, with the 1-0 lead here, top of the ninth, you know, that I think he is going to prove or show to the world why he was worthy of that extension, why he's that franchise cornerstone that you build a team around. And so I'm looking forward to see what he can do, because he's just a cool kid. You know, he's young, but he's young in age, but he's mature in poise and professionalism on a baseball field. Obviously, his dad played in the big league, so he's grown up around the game for a long time. But I'm excited to see what he's going to accomplish in this postseason, his first yet. Because I do think the Royals will get past the Orioles.
The Royals do have, maybe in this series, Team of Destiny vibes, because they got that one guy in Bobby Witt Jr. But I think the team that has the most Team of Destiny vibes would be the New York Mets, because they got the Grimace thing. They got Francisco Lindor. Yeah. They win maybe the best game we will see in what wasn't the postseason, but it might as well have been the postseason yesterday. Do the Mets have enough magic to sustain this, in your opinion, or is the top-heavy nature of the National League just too top-heavy?
I tell you what, I don't agree with you that they're the most in terms of vibey. Justin, but I tell you what, I don't want to play the Mets right now. I don't want to play the Mets right now, and I do not want to play the Padres, but I sure as heck don't want to play the Tigers. And the Tigers, to me, have the most, like, unbelievable vibe right now. Again, no one gave the Tigers a chance, right? Especially, remember, they were sellers at the deadline. They got rid of Jack Flaherty, who obviously went to Los Angeles. And as a Dodger fan, I'm like, thank God we have Jack Flaherty, because even more so now, who the heck is going to be starting in the postseason for this club? But they were sellers, and they still had, thank goodness they didn't get rid of Tarek Skubal, right? But they still have figured it out and found a way to make it happen. And I had a conversation the other day with AJ Hinch, the manager of the Tigers. And he, you know, that saying that, you know, objects in the mirror are closer than they appear. He basically had that in all of their lockers, because that's how they feel. Like, they have this unbelievable sense of, you know, just community within that clubhouse, and a feeling that they don't doubt that they can win, and they're winning, and they have a really good lineup. I think we don't give enough credit to the, you know, Carey Carpenters of the world, the Riley Greens of the world, the Parker Meadows of the world, the Spencer Torkelsons of the world. And then you have obviously Tarek Skubal, and then it kind of falls off after that. But again, Montero, complete game shutout over the course of this season. I say that now because that's a big deal of letting guys go nine innings, you know, those types of things. So they'll figure it out. And AJ Hinch, regardless of, you know, the past and the stuff that's happened to him when he was with the Astros, he's an unbelievably gifted baseball mind, and he has a way of managing a team that I think is incredibly smart. And they'll figure out a way to do it. So I'm going to go with the Tigers as that team that has a vibe. If you want to split it in between leagues, sure, I'll take the Mets as a team. But man, the Padres are really, really good too.
Yeah, I want to ask you about the Padres. It's a bit self-serving. I won't just make it the Padres, but you know, the Dodgers, I think they're top of the marquee, at least in terms of interest going into these playoffs. Sure. Padres, Braves, Phils would be the most likely to trip them up if they don't go to the World Series. Which one has the best chance? Like, what's the worst matchup in your opinion for the Dodgers?
You know, honestly, I think every one of the National League teams is the worst matchup right now. And I say that as a Dodger fan, because they're hurt. They're hurt. I mean, Landon Knack is your fourth guy in a postseason. Nothing against Landon Knack, but I mean, these guys have come up out of necessity, not out of necessarily production. I mean, obviously, you're going to have Jack Flaherty. You're going to have Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who has been bright at times, but has also spent a ton of time on the shelf. You know, Walker Buehler, he's gotten better as of late, but he's not the butane that he was before the second Tommy John surgery. And then you have Landon Knack, Clayton Kershaw, who knows? He's not available for the DS, maybe for the CS. You've got a litany of guys that are hurt, that have that postseason experience that are not available to you. So I think anybody can beat the Dodgers right now. The Phillies, to me, are the strongest team in the National League, just up and down based on talent, based on experience, based on been there, done that type of situation. But again, the Phillies don't have that momentum and mojo that the Mets do. Now, if the Mets would have lost game one and they had struggled in that, and then they ended up winning game two in not such a dramatic fashion, maybe that momentum doesn't carry into the wild card. So maybe I like the Brewers more, but right now I'm taking the Mets over the Brewers. I'm taking the Padres to win their series, and then I'm taking the Phillies to win the National League pennant to beat the Yankees in the World Series.
Okay. Oh, I was just about to ask you for your pick, and you just laid it up right for us. That's good, because Justin and I think we've all picked three different teams.
That's good.
So may the best one win.
Isn't that an embodiment of this season, you guys?
Yeah,
that
I think that's
all three of us think, like, any team. I really wouldn't be surprised if any team won the World Series. There's not a team this year that, to me, sticks out like, oh, they're the absolute hands-down favorite. If all things being equal, if everybody stays healthy, like, this is the team that's going to win no matter what. I just don't. Like, there's nobody that is so far and above everybody else. And I think that's the beauty of this year. It's like not a single team won 100 games. Not that that matters, because the Dodgers have won 100 games the last 100 years, and then they get bounced in the first round by an opponent. But I am not bitter at all.
No.
It's totally fine. But I just think that's the greatness about this sport. I think the American League is easier to navigate, but it wouldn't surprise me if any of the teams that are in the postseason bracket right now go on to win it all.
I agree with you when you came on and said it's the best postseason. I love watching October baseball. So we appreciate you jumping on, Alana. Enjoy the rest of the games today. I'm sure we'll definitely chat before the World Series, and enjoy it all.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Anytime. Thanks for having me, as always.
Thanks so much. That's Alana Rizzo of MLB Network. Okay. Stuart picks.
All right.
before we take a break and some game ends and then we come back and we look like fools.
It all changes.
I said it. I'm going Phillies, baby. +410 to win the World Series. Feeling good about my guy, Rob Thompson. Feeling good about playing the Brewers or the Mets, even though Alana Rizzo's big on the Mets and they're the team of destiny. I don't care. Sorry, Grimace. Long division lead. Their bullpen's great. They're very not pushed to the limit. They're ready to come into October baseball and prove that last couple times that they knocked at the door has taught them something. So go Phillies.
I'm going with the Padres. Probably led the show. Probably no surprise, given that I was asking Alana about it. I like the Padres a lot. I think they're set up perfectly to beat the Dodgers. If it's 50-50 or a little less than 50-50 against the Phillies, I'm happy being +950 nice. With the Padres. But I'm also going to play a couple other things because I'm greedy. World Series MVP for Tatis, Machado, Dylan Cease, Jerickson Profar. Long numbers on all four of those. That's the way to make it a little bit more interesting, at least for me.
I always get like a jump scare when I see Profar because it could not be closer to four.
I don't like saying it because
it looks like
also Jerickson, so it's like J Profar.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess I don't know what the J.
Well, my brother's name's Jordan.
There you go.
It's pretty close.
Maybe that's
what honestly,
I for.
Think I see him his name every time I see Jerickson Profar.
There you go.
All right, we'll take your text at 595-90. We got a couple to go through on the other side of the break. Who is going to win the World Series? Let us know. 595-90, standard message and data rates apply. We'll take a break. We'll talk to John Morosi, who I'm sure is excited about those pesky Tigers, who got the 1-0 series lead against the Astros a little earlier on today. We'll talk a little bit about some Blue Jays news as well, because we're going to hear from Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins tomorrow. We'll cover that here on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So we'll make sure everybody knows where to listen and when. So that is all to come with John Morosi after the break.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back in the Fan Pregame Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. We've got some games going on, but we were just talking mascots off the air because mentioned Grimace.
I was pumping the tires of Grimace. Can he be a factor? Maybe that says something about the Mets that I'm going to their mascot and not.
But you forgot about my guy, the Philly Fanatic.
Yeah, like, that would be the counter.
Unbelievable vibes coordinator.
He's
of that
the standard
city.
He's the
but
standard
then,
by which
the
mascots
Mets
are
measured. Mr. Met and Mrs. Met, which is kind of unfair. How many mascots
We're up
is
to
too
three
many?
Mascots.
Pick one, and you can't have three. It's cheating.
And more mascots than they have viable postseason starting pitchers.
Well, there you go. Maybe one of them can pitch. I can't wait to hear what John Morosi has to say, joining us of MLB Network. How about them Tigers, John?
Big win for the Tigers. And I will make this point as you're talking about mascots. Mm-hmm. So prevalent is the Philly Fanatic that we had a manager meeting with the great Rob Thompson of Corunna, Ontario, earlier on this season, manager of the Phillies, of course, and he was wearing one of the special Phillies hats that day, which is just the logo of the Fanatic.
Love that.
So you know you've made it. Mm-hmm. You know you've made it, Justin and Ailish, when the logo of your team, which has won multiple World Series championships, is you, when you are the logo.
I love
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring it up because just before we brought you on, we made our picks and I'm all in on the Phillies. And I think you've probably heard me say that the last 2 years that we've talked before the postseason, but I feel like
it's bound to work once.
This is it. They're better, they're deeper, they're healthy, their vibes are good. So tell me why I'm right to pick the Phillies possibly to be this year's champs.
Ailish, you're always right, first of all. But I do think that the Phillies are an even better team now than they were a year ago. It's interesting. Last year, I covered them in the NLCS against the Diamondbacks. I believed they were the better team, even though they lost. And I think that they were the victim of maybe a couple ill-timed bullpen appearances. I'm not blaming Rob Thompson for that, but I think there were just some relievers that weren't very effective at that time. Rob Thompson has now a better bullpen. And the same cast of position players that I loved watching last year. And then their rotation, when you look at Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola, they're about as stable of a 1-2 in a group as you're going to see almost anywhere in the playoffs right now. So I do think if you had to ask me right now, at least among the two teams that have the bye in the National League, I like the Phillies a lot more than the Dodgers. I think they're a more balanced team. And then I would almost say the Padres, assuming they were able to get through the first round here, they'll be as dangerous as anybody because they're playing such great baseball. They've got a young superstar in Jackson Merrill, Tatis, Machado, Luis Arraez, of course, just won the batting title again. Their bullpen is dynamite. So I really think that if I were picking the NL power poll right now, Ailish, I would actually put Phillies 1, Padres 2, Dodgers 3.
Okay, so Ailish is right.
Because Justin picked the Padres.
I'm right-ish because I'm in the Padres. But I like how you power rank them. But my take off the top was, yeah, they're built in a lab to beat the Dodgers, or at least this version of the Dodgers. So let's talk about the Dodgers for a second. If it's Padres-Dodgers, that's great, and we'll see that matchup. We'll see if I'm like Ailish and right. But can the Dodgers overcome their deficiencies? We all know they have deficiencies. We all know they have pitching issues, but they also have Shohei Ohtani, who's going to be in the playoffs for the first time and doing Shohei Ohtani things to the extent that he can. Can that offense be what's not normal, which is something that can overcome clear deficiencies, which are pitching? Can the Dodgers just out-hit their problems?
Well, it's an excellent way of framing it, Justin, because that's exactly where the Dodgers find themselves. They're going to have to be that good offensively because the pitching, it's not that the pitching is bad. It's just unpredictable. And the Dodgers, my favorite stat that I've said about them this season, they've played 15 straight playoff games, 1-5, 15, without their starting pitcher getting an out in the sixth inning. The sixth. That's pretty remarkable when you think about how many games they've played in a row that way. And again, during that entire streak that I'm mentioning, they've won zero World Series. And these two things are related. You can, and the Tigers will try, starting tomorrow, to bullpen your way through a couple games of a series. But that plan only works for the Tigers because of what happened with the first dude who pitched today, and that's Skubal. The Dodgers need somebody to pitch like Skubal, and maybe it's going to be Skubal's former teammate in Jack Flaherty. They better hope it is, because I'm not sure who else can do that for them right now. Kershaw, we know the injuries have been there all season long. Yamamoto, same situation. I just don't know who I trust. I trust their lineup just fine, at least the top three guys I trust. But the depth, I'm not sure that I trust. The bullpen, I don't think it's the best bullpen. Certainly not as good as what the Padres have right now. And I don't think they're even as deep as the Phillies. So, and yet, I say all these things, Justin. The Dodgers are a very convenient team to pick on right now. I think they still had the second or third best record in the NL in the month of September. So it's not as though they were just slumping to the end. Because, by the way, if they had slumped that badly, the Padres would have passed them because the Padres were playing such great ball late in the season. So I really think the standings tell us there was not a single team that won 100 games, which means it's a very balanced playoffs. And that's the reality that I'm seeing on the air today and certainly as we look towards the weekend.
All right, so let's go to this wild card round because we've got four games today. One of them already, two of them already completed. Tigers, as we mentioned, with the big win over the Astros. But the Royals just grabbed one over the Orioles. And we just talked to Alana Rizzo, who's excited about Bobby Witt Jr. and about the potential of like following that story. And I wonder for you, like the Orioles have been a team, obviously with us in the AL East, like watching this young team, wondering when it's going to finally like happen for them. But they didn't really have the greatest end to the regular season, and they find the way like walking their way into the postseason. So you look at this Royals team and this Orioles team, Royals and Orioles, well, that's a tongue twister itself. So, how do you see this one going?
So I think today's game was a real difficult one for Baltimore because you have your ace. Corbin Burnes pitched tremendously well. He got him into the ninth inning, and it still wasn't enough. And they scored zero runs. They were shut out. Now, in the case of the Royals, Cole Reagans was out there, which, by the way, is the playbook. You throw the lefty against Baltimore. It's interesting, of course, both the Tigers and the Royals, two AL Central teams, both threw their lefties against favored home teams and both won with tremendous performances. I think that the Royals have the right recipe of pitching. And by the way, tomorrow you would say it's at least a coin flip, maybe even advantage to KC because you've got Lugo in game two against likely Zach Eflin. The Royals bullpen I like. Lucas Erceg came on and got the save today. And when you score one run, you're winning by the barest of margins. The Royals do not have what I would describe as an overwhelming offense. It's even at their best. We saw Pasquantino come back today. He is still clearly just finding his way. He was able to walk late in the game, but he's not 100% yet either. I agree with Alana in that the storyline, and Witt had the RBI earlier today. It's a great series if we're talking about two of the best young shortstops that we have ever seen in Witt and Henderson. So it's an extraordinary time to talk about these two players. And Witt today had the big hit, and his team wins a tight, low-scoring game. And it's amazing, too, that right in the middle of it, Ailish, is Sal Perez, who was part of this team 10 years ago. He had the wild card game walk-off hit against the A's in 2014, which feels like it was a lifetime ago. And here he is still now making an impact. So it's the Royals are a fun team. The Orioles on the same side of things with Baltimore, they were supposed to be a better team last year in the playoffs. They got swept. Right now they're 0-1. It's hard to draw conclusions about teams based on two series, but at some point you got to win. We talked about them a lot during the year, all this young talent. You're right. They had sort of a sluggish second half. They were better the last week once they got healthy, but there's a lot of questions right now about just how resilient they're going to be. They've got to do better offensively in game two.
No reminders of 2015, John, as the wounds are still not healed. I see parallels between the Guardians and Brewers, and part of that is like a little bit of ignorance. They're not the flashiest teams. They're not the teams that get all the headlines across baseball, but they're teams that had immense success over the course of the regular season. One is playing in the wild card round, and the Brewers, who are, I believe, down right now in game one early to the Mets. But is there a sleeping giant among the teams that's not talked about that much in the Guardians and the Brewers, who had outstanding seasons?
I think you're right, Justin, and certainly there's a common thread there. First-year managers in both cases. Stephen Vogt taking over for the retiring future Hall of Famer Terry Francona, and then, of course, Pat Murphy succeeding Craig Counsell in Milwaukee. They're both fun stories for different reasons. I think the Guardians, the sun and the moon and the stars for them is still Jose Ramirez, who I still think is one of my favorite players in the game to watch. He is underappreciated, I think. I believe that one day I'll be voting for him for the Hall of Fame. He's that good of a player. He's there in the conversation every single year, quietly. But look at his numbers. The numbers he puts up are just extraordinary, and he's a really good defensive player as well. They've brought in some younger players. John Kenzie Noel comes to mind. There's a little bit of swing and miss in his game. But they brought up Kyle Manzardo, who they got in a trade. And that is classic Cleveland Guardians. They got Manzardo in a trade last year, and now all of a sudden he's batting right in the middle of their lineup, and he's going to have a huge impact, I believe, on the way they play going forward. I think Milwaukee, I'll say this, I'm a little bit more sure of the Cleveland chances because I think their pitching staff and the rotation is a little more reliable. Milwaukee is going to go with kind of an opener bulk plan starting as soon as tomorrow, whereas I think Cleveland's got a little bit more length. And it's interesting, too, the commonality of both. I think Devin Williams, probably the best closer in the NL. Emmanuel Clase, probably the best closer in the world with what he's done for Cleveland. So they both, I think you're spot on, Justin. They've got some similarities.
That's a strong parallel.
The Tigers, though, too, they're a fun story. The Tigers are, they've been overlooked, and people sort of think, okay, it's a nice story. They've got to the playoffs. They just beat the Astros in game one, 3-1 with Skubal, and now they have this creativity going forward. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And they've got the manager, A.J. Hinch, who knows that club from the other side so well. So it could be a pretty interesting Detroit-Cleveland series there in the division series if the Tigers win one more game.
Do you allow your family to believe in the Tigers, or do you have to, like, bring them back down to earth a bit?
My mom does. I mean, she's all in. She loves Matt Vierling. I saw Matt Vierling's family. I covered the game on Friday when the Tigers clinched, and I talked to Matt's parents. His family was there, and I said, hey, my mom's favorite player is your son, which is always kind of fun to be able to say. It's just he's a heck of a player. He had a big game today. I think the Morosis are all in. They're not maybe saying they're going to win at all necessarily, but I think Detroit, especially after that game last night with the Lions, people in Detroit are walking a little tall, at least until we run into the Leafs during the course of the hockey season.
Oh, boy. We'll talk Toronto, but we'll talk Toronto Blue Jays for a second here with you because we saw some staffing changes. I mean, most notably hitting coach Guillermo Martinez, who's been with the team for six seasons, and we're expected to hear from Ross and Mark tomorrow. I just wonder, like, with them making the announcement that they're going to speak tomorrow, do you assume that we're not going to see any major organizational changes from those two at least, and maybe more fringe changes for the Blue Jays this offseason?
I think that's fair, Ailish. And I go back to what Mark Shapiro said late in the season, second half, when he spoke with the media about valuing continuity. I think those words spoke volumes. We've seen some teams make changes already, whether it's the Giants or the Cardinals. And I think the fact that both Mark and Ross are going to speak together, pretty good indication that they're both back. And I would think that if there was going to be a change at manager, we would have heard about it by now. And I don't think there will be one. And this is a team that when you look at their pitching plan, and I think John Schneider works well with Pete Walker, the rotation, I think if you look at the big picture here, and Manoah's injury aside, which is that's a big negative, but that's sort of beyond their purview, you could say, because it's a health thing. But the way that I think the way that certainly Bowden Francis developed and the way that Yadiel developed as well, those are good building blocks for next year. And the way that Pete can work with John on that. I do think, and this is an important acknowledgement on the part of the organization, they need a different plan offensively. They Vladdy was the show this year, and then there was not a whole lot around him in terms of high-level performance. They've got to be better. They have got to be better. And if I'm the Jays, I look at the full organizational hitting philosophy from start to finish, and I canvass the major leagues. Who are the best teachers of hitting? Who are the best private instructors for hitting? Who are the best recently retired players that would want to do this job? I mean, I am saying canvas the world for the best hitting philosophy and the best communicators. Because I think that's the one thing I felt as though following this team all year, the messaging seemed different. There was maybe, okay, I was hearing this at AAA, and it was different at the major league level. They need a program. Mm-hmm. It's almost like when a hockey team hires a new skating coach, and it's like power skating, it's got to be infused in the entire organization. That's got to be what the Jays do. They've got to do the entire, from A to Z, how are we going to have a different plan? And I think that's what they have to do now in the days ahead.
Let's say, hypothetically, John, last one for you, they found a way to sign Vladdy to an extension before real dealings get done this winter. Do you think that like materially changes the way things can get done for the Blue Jays? They got a lot of heavy lifting, and this Vlad question, yeah, it's probably a question across baseball as much as it's a question here in Toronto.
Yeah, it is. And I think that the way I'll answer that is I still believe that he will not sign anything until Soto signs his contract because it's the comparison is too close. They're so close in age. Their overall career achievements are relatively close. And Vladdy, if I'm his agent, I'm waiting, and I'll wait and watch and see what Juan Soto signs for. And maybe it's going to be a number that starts with a 6. I mean, the numbers I'm hearing now are extraordinary, and I guess we'll see how it all plays out. But if that number starts with a 6, then Vladdy walks in and says, okay, I know there was a lot of money talked about last winter with Shohei. This guy just signed for $600. I'm really close to him. What do you got? I mean, that's how I see this thing playing out is that Vladdy's going to wait. I do think that if you get him signed early, great. But I would be quite surprised if he signs anytime before Soto agrees on his next big contract.
We can play the game of who signs first, Jeremy Swayman or Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Couple extra zeros for Vladdy, I think.
You know, Jeremy, listen, I guess what I would say to Jeremy Swayman is, you know, Detroit seems to be the center of the sports world right now. You know, it might not be a bad
idea. Why not an offer sheet?
Give us an offer sheet, John. Make it happen.
That's it. Now, we need, I've always said, it's funny, I'll say this quickly. When I explain to people in baseball what the rule is in hockey about offer sheets, baseball people say, well, why don't people just sign them all the time? I just answer, because they just don't. I don't have a great – it's a longer explanation, and it just doesn't happen all that often.
I know. We would love to see it. We need some drama. And if the Bruins have a step backwards this year, I'll be so upset about that. John, we appreciate you jumping on. Enjoy the march to the World Series. We'll definitely be chatting soon. Thanks so much.
Happy postseason. All the best.
Thank you so much. John Morosi of MLB Network. Just quickly that's funny about Jeremy Swayman. I'm just ready for them to just say.
You want this to be over?
He's not going to play this year. Okay. Just a reminder that Sportsnet 590 The Fan is proud to support the Canadian Cancer Society CIBC Run for the Cure on Sunday, October 6th at Sir Winston Churchill Park, 301 St. Clair Avenue, West Toronto, where registration gets underway at 8:30 a.m. This is Canada's largest single-day volunteer-led event in support of all people impacted by breast cancer. Funds raised will support world-leading breast cancer research and the compassionate support system for all who need it. For full details, visit sportsnet.ca/590 or cancer.ca.
And while we're doing reminders, just a reminder that Blair and Barker will be covering the news conference for the Blue Jays tomorrow, 11 to 1. People can watch the conference on sportsnet.ca.
Okay, Swayman stuff. So the latest being they're off, right? The discussion about the dollar figure might be off by a few dollars.
Yeah.
But that just ruffled a lot of feathers. Cam Neely's comments, and then obviously we hear from Jeremy Swayman's agent. It's spicy.
Well, that's why you can't, like, if you're in a position like Cam Neely is, Don Sweeney is, emotion just kills you.
That was
right?
So emotional.
Because you go over the top and you say $64 million,
and it was
when maybe
62
the ask
point
was
whatever
it was. But yeah, in your head, you're not doing the decimal rounding. You're just saying 64, and you're doing it frustratingly. And the agent can come over the top and say that's never been discussed, and they can look like they at least have the upper hand in that situation. I am stunned. All the hugs we've seen from Jeremy Swayman, the vibes, the importance to the team, how Boston never finds themselves in this position, how this has spiraled out of control, it seems. And I still believe, just because it's Boston, that it'll get done and they'll figure it out. Because that's what it generally seems to be when it comes to the Boston Bruins and, well, really most Boston sports teams. This is getting uglier than I ever could have imagined.
Can you imagine if this was happening in this market? It's actually nice for once to sit up, put my feet up on the counter and just with my cup of tea and watch another market deal with contract drama, because it's actually interesting to be online seeing the memes and being like so far attached from it all. But I am surprised that it's got this bad so quickly. But I will say, I remember last year, I probably was in this same chair, and I said the Bruins were not going to make the playoffs, and I looked like a fool. So I'm not going to say anything about the Bruins and how this will impact their season, because they showed me last year.
No, and I would still have some degree of bullishness on them, because the Bruins, like we saw in the playoff series,
find a way
against the Maple Leafs and beyond, like they play a way and play a style. Well, yeah, you depend on a 64 or $62.4 million goaltender to make those saves. But boy, do they find a way to make it difficult to get to Jeremy Swayman or Linus Ullmark. They created, in my eyes, and Carter Hutton would disagree because we talked to him a couple weeks ago and he believes wholeheartedly, in Ullmark. But they have a system where they can make their goaltenders shine. And the next goaltender up won't be as good as Swayman, I don't think. But I think that's part of the reason why there's some reluctance here, because they know the Bruin way helps goaltenders. And the Bruin way of old used to make sure that no one made more than the most important player on the team, which used to be Patrice Bergeron. Everything seemed to fall in line. And since Bergeron left, things have been less orderly. Orderly fashion has gone by the wayside with the Boston Bruins, a little bit with David Pastrnak. Now with Swayman, it's a new world, and Cam Neely doesn't seem to be dealing with it very well.
You could possibly send Jeremy Swayman some golf course recommendations if he doesn't want to play this season in Ireland. So how was your golf trip?
I could. It was good. Hopefully it won't be windy for him, because a par 5 turns into a par 7 pretty quickly when you're going into that Irish wind.
Or do you play from, like, is there like the tips? Or like you play
we
like
definitely didn't play from the tips. We were basically told, like, the recommendation for someone who's not pro would be... Well, they don't even do the whites. I think there were greens we mostly played there. So it's a little bit different. But playing the tips, I mean, you take 5 really good shots on a par 5 to get anywhere near the green if you're going through the wind. Yeah. It is a completely different game. And it's really not surprising how many golfers come from that region, especially Northern Ireland. I went to a bar in Northern Ireland with all the different famous golfers, famous caddies that have come from that region. Small area, and yet there's so much talent. It's one, because they don't do much more than golf and go to pubs. But 2 is, man, your game has to be so adaptable to conditions, because you can't fake it when there's wind and rain and monsoons coming your way, because there was at least one monsoon. Yeah.
How many rounds did you guys get in?
5.
5. And you said 2 of them were gorgeous, right?
2 were gorgeous. 1 was really good. 2 were pretty rough.
You kind of got like a nice like trick-or-treat bag full of goodies.
It was good. It was a good, good variety.
October.
Good variety, for sure.
Well, I'm excited. Well, you'll have to let me know, because I'm trying to head out there for the Open next year. And you were in Portrush.
Hey, you got to book your hotel.
Well, there's
soon
nowhere to stay. Like,
there ain't much lodging in Portrush.
No, I think I'm literally in a tent. Yeah. Northern Ireland, I might be on a boat.
And again, I'd rather be on a golf course with the rain than a tent with the rain.
There's no tenting. Well, I don't want a tent.
You're not tenting.
No. Anyway, that was a fun one. Welcome back to the gang. Fan pregame back for season two. So as we mentioned, it's going to be Blair and Barker taking the press conference tomorrow, 11-1, with Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro. And you can also watch that on sportsnet.ca. And we'll be back as well. And we'll be on the Leafs game later this week. We're getting back into the work grind, Justin.
It's season two officially.
It is.
No more rest.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Enjoy playoff baseball. We'll be back tomorrow.